The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
You're looking at the monitor. It's freaking me out. Beyond.
It's great.
Beyond.
Quit it. Okay.
Beyond.
Okay. Slow it to a roll.
I'm very excited about
right.
this
Slow
week.
Slow it to a roll. Now, everybody just get right down into the baby position.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry.
Is that we're the off to a real good start.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to the show about PlayStation. I don't know. I'm Max Scoville. Joining me, Marty Sliva.
Hi, Max.
Brian Altano.
What's up, PlayStation fans around the world? You're the bestest fans that I've ever, ever known. You're the number one people, the number one friends. You're the PlayStation people from here to the end. And I love... What?
I'm Andrew Goldfarb.
So the monarch butterfly is the poisonous one.
Shut up.
I
told
you. And the viceroy looks like... It's poisonous. It's not it doesn't like sting you if you eat it, if you're an animal. So the monarch... looks like this, and the viceroy is totally not poisonous, but it makes itself
viceroy,
look like
your occupation has ended here.
It's so it won't get eaten.
So we, right before we started rolling, we started talking, Max, I didn't know that there were certain poisonous butterflies.
You meant venomous. It's all kinds of stuff. You eat it, you die.
Yeah.
Most plants have caffeine because they don't want people to eat them.
It's an anti-predator thing.
Welcome back from DICE.
Yeah.
You too.
Hey, thanks, man.
Yeah, you went to DICE in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine saw a lot of cool, weird stuff and talked to people. Tell us some stories about that.
We had a great show while you guys were gone.
I listened.
We talked about
this thing that people, it was very controversial.
Did not talk about any meat at all.
No.
I don't know, contrary to popular belief.
A lot of people were tweeting only at me, like with none of you guys CC'd, like a ham picture. And I'm like, I'm glad I understand this reference because I listened to the show, but man, that was confusing for a second.
Actually, we didn't specifically tell anyone to do that to you. We said to do it to us, so it's weird they did it to you.
Yeah.
In fact, if you hadn't listened to the show, you would have just come to your Twitter one day and there's just hundreds of hot honey hams.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, welcome back from DICE.
Thanks, man.
What is DICE?
The
I still don't know.
Design, innovate, create, envelope.
Interface.
Anamorph.
Design, innovate, create, entertain.
I don't know how to spell it.
Yeah, it's the DICE Summit. It's there are a lot of cool talks by the opening talks were by Randy Pitcher and Penn Jillette. They did a cool talk about how magic is similar to video games, like relating the idea of sleight of hand to the way you might create a video game, that everything is not as it seems. They end with a trick. There was Todd Howard from Bethesda gave a good talk. Tommy Francois from Ubisoft, who's their new IP editorial director, talked a bunch about what kind of research they do to make a new IP to make a game feel immersive. Kojima and Del Toro did a talk together. There was a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I got food poisoning.
Marty got food poisoning, so
evidently it was because I ate a shishito pepper.
Is that a game?
Yeah, it was it was just really immersive VR.
Food poisoning is the most realistic thing yet. Yeah.
And I missed my Kojima interview. Andrew had to do that because I vomited in a shower.
Yeah.
Wow.
I felt totally fine, and then I got in the shower, and then I'm like, oh, this isn't good. And I text Andrew, and I'm like, hey, I just threw up, and I'm not sure why.
I took a one-minute shower, and I ran down the stairs to meet Mr. Kojima.
How's Kojima? What's he up to?
It was really good.
How's his beard?
His beard looked great.
He looks clean. Really good. He's one of those guys who's like anti-Benjamin or Benjamin Buttoning. He's getting better looking as he goes along.
Anti-Benjamin Buttoning is just living life.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Was this your first time meeting him?
Yes.
How yep. was? Were you like geeked out at all?
A little bit, but no. I mean, like it's not like I was like nervous or anything. It was interesting because we had a fairly short time with him, and there's a lot I would love to talk to him about that isn't even about him.
All that time you spent playing the Phantom Pain.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the weird thing for me. Like, I'm not a Metal Gear guy at all. So it's like, I put BT.
I just fell into a dream interview.
I mean, that was my thing. It's like, I was so excited for this. And then I ate a shishito pepper, and my body wasn't happy with that. And I died.
Yeah. Well, I've always said there's like a handful of people who I would get, like, legit starstruck around, like, in this industry. Like, Miyamoto was, I kept my ish together.
Miyamoto was my only real starstruck.
Yeah. I think Kojima would be up there just in terms of, like, dude. Like, you've been, I think there's people who've just, like, they just made a game that came out last year, and then there's people who've been here from the start. Mm-hmm. Kojima's one of those guys, it's like, he's seen it all, and he stuck around. Like, that's the weird thing. There's other people who are like, yeah, I made a few games, and then I got out and went and worked on this, or did this, or that. Like, he stayed.
And he's one of those guys that it's so interesting to talk to him about, like, games 30 years ago versus now. Like, talking to him about VR, he was like, oh, we've been talking about VR for 20 years. Like, that part's not exciting. What's exciting is that the ideas I had 20 years ago are now a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, and that's really cool. Like, that's a different angle than I think you get from a lot of people.
What about Del Toro? Do you have anything to say?
We didn't talk to Del Toro, but
what was their talk about? Like, what kind of stuff did they...
Their talk was actually way more personal than I expected it to be. I thought it would be more kind of far-reaching, like, industry stuff, and it was really specifically
It was almost about their friendship.
Exactly, yeah. Which was really good. If you haven't seen that talk, it's online, and it's actually just a fun, really, really adorable thing of two friends just talking about collaborating.
Yeah, they were sort of they were talking about what's the most iconic moment in the others sort of in their repertoire. Del Toro mentioned obviously the Psycho Mantis thing from Metal Gear Solid One, and then Kojima mentioned the hand eye thing from
he
had the eyes drawn on his hand, and so he like went up like this and he had them there. It was super cute.
That's really adorable.
And then
so he didn't wash his hands for like a while.
It would be great if during the interview earlier that morning Andrew's like, yeah, my final question is why you got eyeballs drawn on your hands,
or he goes to shake your hand and then you walk around the rest of the day with one eye. And Kojima does the thing, it's like only one eye.
It was
eye.
Funny because he went up on stage like hours later to accept the Lifetime Achievement Award, and I was like trying to see his hands and like to see if he had washed those off or not.
You know, I saw him hanging around the buffet table with those shishito peppers. You didn't wash the
Saboteur.
That's so cool that they're friends.
But then they were also like, you know, Del Toro's like, yes, he's been burned a couple times in games with Insane and with this, and he's like sort of, but he's still been like, literally any time Kojima would ever call me about a project, I am on board, sight unseen.
Yeah.
And so I can really imagine the two of them doing something still.
Well, think about it. It's like he's been burned a few times on games, but like his friend just made one of the best games of the last 5 years in one of the worst places to make a game.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years. So that's still sort of saying like, yeah, even in the worst case scenario possible, you can still like eke out
with something good.
Perfection or close to it, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
anything else that you took away from DICE that's like anecdotally interesting?
We know what you left at DICE, and that's a lot of poops.
Turts and bombs.
Yep.
Now, like, VR is going to be huge. That's a thing that push is happening more and more. And yeah, just like, I don't know, it was interesting to hear sort of the, it seems like the trend going forward is like almost the big thing going forward is going to be world building. The concept of world building seems like the next, like, it's less it felt like a generation or two ago, it was like, how do we replicate human emotion and the uncanny valley? Whereas now it's like, how do we create worlds that are not only bigger, but more dense and more dynamic?
It's really interesting because my first couple of DICEs were like 2012, 2013. Approaching the launch of new hardware, and it felt like a transition. It felt like everyone bracing themselves for something big and talking about it and what's going to change. And this year almost felt like that again, but with VR and with that idea of immersiveness and about world building and about like what is going to be different in games. It's that weird idea that, I mean, we've talked about this a million times on this show, but like that moment of Mario 64 and GTA 3 and all of those things of like, this is dramatically different than what came before. Everyone's kind of bracing themselves for that moment. I don't know if it'll happen or not.
Yeah, which we arguably haven't had since GTA 3.
Yeah.
Do you think that sort of like that world building idea is because there's less of that kind of terror of the uncanny valley when it comes to creating a universe as much as there is to creating a character? Like when a human doesn't work, it breaks the immersion far more than when a city doesn't or a jungle doesn't. You know, like I think like getting lost in a skybox or sort of like the environment around you when the wind doesn't sway the way you would expect it to or blades of grass don't bend. It's not the same as when a guy runs up to you and he's like, hi, how are you? And his face is broken. And
yeah.
I mean, like that kind of stuff. It's like you'll see a character break through an environment and it'll kill the game for you. But when a car does it, like you don't care as much because
yeah, if I'm playing a game that's perfect in every way except I clip through a wall as I'm running by it, that's going to bother me a lot less than if like the companion I have for the entire game is just broken. Like Ellie in The Last of Us was just like a monster the entire time, that would be like a lot less immersive.
Yeah. I mean, that's the uncanny valley for you though. Yeah. I think it's interesting in terms of like world building. I hope this means smarter world building and not just quantity
or bigger. Yeah, I'm totally with you.
First thing that came to mind, obviously, is Witcher. Like, I think that's one of the most beautifully fleshed out worlds that I've seen in a game ever.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like how, one thing I just love is that as you're leaving a city, like you'll be in this large kind of, you know, inner city area, and there's people running around and talking, and there's like geese in the streets, and it's just like, you know, there's people farting and shouting at you and kind of weird, gross stuff that you expect. And as you leave, it's not just like you walk through a gate and you're in this like wilderness where there's like monsters running around. Like it's a gradual transition from being in a city to being in a wilderness.
Yeah.
Yep.
And like that's what real civilization is like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like Fallout, I feel like has less of that. Like there's
Fallout's almost like zoned.
It has the excuse of being obviously like it's something that broke down and was rebuilt, you know? Like,
well, somebody actually posted something in the Podcast Beyond group, plug, a couple days ago, which was when you go indoors in Fallout 4, if you look outside, it looks like, and I'm sorry I'm forgetting your name, but it looks like an N64 version of Fallout 4.
Oh, yeah.
Because their version of skyboxing was the sort of just like, you won't see it. But it's like, well, yeah, you will, because this game is about looking in every pocket and looking in every corner. So that's when things sort of start falling apart for me. Mm-hmm. But I think for the most part, like, games are getting way, way better at that kind of stuff. Like, I remember back in this sort of like PS1 N64 days, you would constantly run into literal invisible walls where it was like, you can't go here anymore. And games that still do that are kind of like,
oh yeah,
like what are you doing?
Yeah,
yeah, and that's what pissed me off about playing The Division. Like,
right,
the beta, yeah. It's just like, I can walk over garbage bags. Like, find something more believable to design. Like, put up barriers. If there's a barrier there, make it an actual barrier.
Especially since with people, that's happening too, though. Like, it's that thing of like, it's a stupid joke or whatever, but like playing a first person shooter and looking down and not seeing your feet because you are a floating camera. Like, I just played Firewatch this weekend, and it's like that entire time I knew the sense of space of where my character was. Like, every hand movement, every time I'm jumping over something, like, that is the most I've ever felt like I knew where that character was in a first person game. And I think in VR, that'll be 10 times more important.
A lot of that had to do with the sort of like sense of weight too. Like,
that
was one of the first times I've ever played a first person shooter as a kind of fat guy.
I love his like adorable chubby hands.
Yeah
He almost was like Wreck-It Ralph.
It's I actually felt like Wreck-It Ralph walking through that forest, whereas when I play Call of Duty, I feel like this, you know, skinny muscular 7 foot tall super soldier.
You're a camera running around on a tripod. I mean, you feel like you are just moving through that world, and you are like a vessel for pushing forward. Whereas, you feel like you are a character moving through the world in Firewatch.
And it gets more difficult when you start adding more factors, right? Like, you were always telling me about, because you got very into Bioshock Infinite and how they programmed Elizabeth in that game.
Yeah, she runs like 80 miles per hour to keep up with you.
Yeah, because you're so used to running really fast in first-person shooters that if you didn't in that game, you'd feel like it's slow. But that game is about companionship. Yep. So to give you a companion, you have to have this lightning-fast, speedy Gonzalez girl with you.
I love the idea
times.
That when you're looking at her, she's always moving pretty slow. And the second you turn around, she's like...
Yeah, it's actually really interesting, you know, like to watch that happen.
Is it? They threw a Team Fortress on Oculus Rift like early on.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, people really could not play as the scout because he goes at like 70 miles an hour. Yeah. Like,
it's weird playing Firewatch after playing The Witness. Like, I love The Witness, but in The Witness, like, you were very much a moving camera. Like, you were not inhabiting a body. And that's sort of almost the point of that game, I think, where it's like, man, it's such a weird transition going into Firewatch and remembering that, like, sprinting, like, is a man sprinting? Like, that's the first time I've ever, like, used, like, the button to toggle running and, like, thought about the fact that, like, a man is running, as weird as that sounds.
Rather than just, like, with the GTA 5 first-person stuff?
No, I want to, actually.
It's really
weird. Someone was just talking about that,
like, they did a really good job of basically kind of overhauling that whole control scheme. Like, you got to go in the settings and screw around and make, like, a control setup that actually kind of works as a first-person thing. But what's really weird is that they have all of the ragdoll effects still in place, but with the camera attached to them. So if you jump out of a plane in first person in GTA, it is the most harrowing thing because your body flips over immediately and you're looking straight up. Because, wow. Like, why? I mean, like, I think you can kind of, you know, move yourself around a little bit, but it's like, it's scary. And you get hit by a car. If you're flying through a windshield, it's like, it moves at the speed that you'd be moving if you were in third person.
Right.
Yeah, I really like when games let you do that. And I think that's, like, I really think it's cool that there are more and more games now where you can switch between third and first. And you can only do that when the model exists. Like, if there's not, like, a third-person model actually existing there, it's a lot harder to pull out a first-person, like, have the game suddenly populated. Mm-hmm. So I think it, like, required next-gen. Like,
it's actually, it's such a subtle thing, but it's why I always loved GoldenEye for N64, because that game starts with this third-person camera panning around Pierce Brosnan.
And it's like,
and then
you
get right into his eyes.
Yeah.
But then that's the weird thing. Like, in, like, a debug environment, I imagine that's still, like, a camera. I mean, even Firewatch is, like, there's no head model for Henry. So it's, like, they've even tweeted, like, developers even tweeted out, like, pictures of, like, basically, like, it's, like, a rig that's, like, a body and then, like, no head there.
Basically. Yeah, it's basically a camera rig, which is really interesting because when I'm playing a first-person shooter, I always imagine that everyone else in the game can see me running around in third-person. But if everyone else in the game had eyes that could see and mouths that they could talk,
terrified.
They would scream.
Yeah, and there's an old Battlefield, I think it was Battlefield 3, there was someone, like, basically went into debug mode and pulled out, and it's, like, a sniper who just has, like, these, like, wavy, like, spaghetti arms.
Hi,
like,
I'm
no
Nightmare
head.
Puppet Arm Boy. Just running around, like, tentacle hands.
What's really weird is Duke Nukem 3D back in 1996 had a cheat that would let you go in a third-person mode, which was, like, it was, like, DN view or something, and it would pull back, but you were this weird little, like, goofy sprite, which is the same thing you'd see if you did multiplayer or if you, like, walked in front of a mirror in that game.
Yeah.
And it was, like, super low-res in comparison to the rest of the level.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it would, like, if you did that, it would pop up this message, like, you're too good to be cheating or something.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Now, I always have that moment in first-person games where I walk in front of a mirror for the first time, and it's sort of, like, every time they show, like, there's, like, a time-lapse movie where, like, a Rip Van Winkle-type character looks in the mirror for the first time, and he's like, my face!
What year is
like,
it?
It's always a nightmare to see yourself in one of those games, because you're like, that's not who I am, I'm me!
Yeah.
So,
interesting.
Yeah, so VR is continuing to be a thing. It's getting more and more real every time they announce a new price point, like they just did for the HTC Vive, which is going to be coming out in early April for $800.
Well, it's really more than $800 because it's also the price of whatever gaming rig you have.
Sure. So,
The price wars have.
Yes. Yeah. But that's compared to Oculus, which is coming out March 28th. That's going to be $600 and obviously also requires a gaming rig. I believe they said, you're probably not going to get much out of it unless you've got like a $1,000 rig. Mm-hmm.
Minimum, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's an investment, and we still haven't heard from Sony.
No, but then just earlier today, we got the invite for a PSVR presentation/hands-on demo event that's being held during GDC here in San Francisco on March 15th. GDC is the Game Developers Conference, which is a week long in San Francisco, and it's where we go see panels and we play demos. Mm-hmm. And
it's also a place where Sony regularly will unveil new hardware.
Yeah.
I think Project Morpheus was announced at GDC.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, a couple years back.
But I mean, they'd show off the PS4 controller or the Vita for the first time behind glass. At this point, it's kind of weird because we've seen PSVR plenty. We know what it looks like. But price point?
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, we've called this at, like, the last five events. But I really feel like this is the one. I mean,
we've Babe Ruthed it incorrectly, like, six times.
Yeah.
Now that, like, these guys got out early.
I think
they
were waiting. I really do think they were waiting for Oculus and Vive because like, we've talked about this a million times, like, these are plus $1,000 minimum. Yeah. So it's like, and if you already have the gaming PC, it's like, you already spent that money, obviously. But, like, for PSVR, it's like, it's plus $400, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's like a PSVR being even $400 plus a system, you can get every single thing you need for the price of just the Vive headset, not counting whatever else
totally.
You need.
Yeah.
And Vive is a really interesting case because Vive is, I mean, you can use it, I think, like you can use an Oculus or just a headset, but you also need, like, these base stations, and you have, like, a room that needs to be prepared.
I mean,
for,
they,
like,
come with the $800.
Yeah. All included in it. But I'm just saying, like, you also need space for it, whereas, like, theoretically, as far as we know, PSVR, you're going to need, you know, there's the PS4, there's, like, the processing box, and then the headset.
So, yeah, at 2 p.m. on the 15th, there's going to be a presentation. It's not going to be a live stream, but we will be there, and we'll be using it. And, yeah, I mean, I've thought at five different events in the last 6 months, I think this is really the time where they're going to announce
And
date.
What do you guys think the price is going to be?
I think we've said $400 before. I think that's sort of where I'm landed on.
Yeah.
I think maximum $400 because I really think they're going to sell this thing at cost or even take a loss because they don't want it to be more expensive than the console itself.
Exactly.
That's, like, that's I can't what, yeah, imagine it being $600 and then a PS4 is $400.
Just on the basic of, like, explaining that to somebody if you're like, Mom, I want to get this thing, or, like, you know.
It's, I think it will absolutely be bundled with something exclusive as well. So I'd say $399 probably with a No Man's Sky type of bundle situation, or something else
or
like
just
it.
Rigs.
So Sony's said, Sony said,
the first party game.
Yeah.
What did they say? Q2 or they said the first half of 2016, whatever their sort of
the first half of 2016.
Yeah, and so that would be until the end of June. But then just at was it the CEO of someone from GameStop
said
fall 2016, which like, I mean,
and Sony said that he was speculating.
True.
I mean, I think. Even if he was, I think he probably wasn't. But let's play their game and say he was speculating. Like, I would imagine his point is that by the fall, this thing will be out.
Yeah,
whether
sure.
it's earlier, like, I can't imagine rolling into Christmas 2016 without PSVR being in people's hands.
Oh, totally, totally.
Yeah. The big advantage they have about if they were to release it around E3 or whatever, I mean, they could do one of those, like, hat trick things where they're like, it's available now or whatever.
Yes, and they could show, like, not only could they be like, hey, here's X amount of games that you can get for it right now, but then also our press conference will be dedicated to... Here's three first-party games that are coming, you know, this fall or next year.
And then, of course, that gives it time to kind of build up hype and reach mainstream people, and you can put kiosks in stores and, like...
And also, like, Oculus is launching with, like there's cool stuff, don't get me wrong. Like, I think, like, Adrift and all those games
Edge of Nowhere.
Yeah. Even, like, what is it, Lucky's Tale or whatever? Yep. Like, there are games that are, like, interesting on Oculus and then plenty of interesting things on Vive, but I don't think they're quite that, like... tear down the walls and get mainstream in games, whereas I feel like Sony does have that catalog. Like, if they do any major franchise attached to this, like, whether it's they've already announced Gran Turismo, but whether it's God of War or whatever else, like, if those things come out with this, like, they just have, between that and the 40 million people who, you know, are going to have PS4s by this fall, like, I think they have this, like, really easy entryway into, like, mainstream appeal, or at least, depending on price, like, they could screw it up, we don't know, but I think they have the easiest path to making VR, like, a cool mainstream thing, even if they have the lower fidelity, kind of cheaper manufacturer headset.
That's not going to matter, you know?
Yeah, there's still also going to be the, you know, Samsung VR.
Yeah, the gear.
Yeah.
And the Google Cardboard stuff.
And those are the things you literally use your phone. Like, you can do that right now with a piece of cardboard. And, like, those are the kind of the lower fidelity, like, indie projects where it's like, you don't need to spend $400, $800, $600, whatever on those. You can play those right now. And I think that's, like, a totally different argument.
So I think their connection to games is obviously stronger than anybody else has. They also have the phone with hundreds of third parties' phone numbers in it, you know.
Yeah.
It's not just one, it's like a whole bunch of phones.
Yeah.
But they
like one giant red phone.
I think they have Sony has a better way of calling up third parties and being like, make something cool for us, help this happen. As you've seen this generation.
I mean, don't underestimate Facebook and Valve. You know, like, that's the thing. Like, the people backing these other, like, and so this is, like, nothing to do with this, but, like, at Sundance this year, there were these bidding wars that, like, haven't been seen in, you know, almost a decade, like, since, like, the 90s when, like, things were big, so more than that. And it's because, like, suddenly Hulu and Netflix and Amazon are participating in these things that are traditionally, like, the big studios. And I think Facebook, if they want to lean into this, and who knows if they will, but, like, if they wanted to, like, they could be a really, like, non-traditional source of, like, we have a ton of money.
Yeah.
Like, let's put it into, like, all of these projects.
Well, so that's exactly it. All the projects, right? Like, everything you named, Hulu, Netflix, all that stuff. Like, what's the one thing that's common about those things? They're everywhere.
Yep.
They're on every device.
Yep.
There's, like, there are no, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there are no, like, Facebook-exclusive Facebook browsing devices. Like, Facebook works everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that if Facebook is integrating in some way with Oculus, they want to integrate in some way with all VR. And they want to be everywhere.
That's why they partner with Microsoft.
Right. Whereas Sony VR is only going to have PlayStation. It's going to be the only place to play their experience.
Oh, yeah. Like, a Sony first-party developed VR game is not... most likely not going to be available
of course,
on Oculus,
whereas I think Facebook will work on.
But
on
think
Sony
about
VR.
Like, you know, Rise of the Tomb Raider, whatever, like these third party deals, right? Like, because every Oculus comes with an Xbox One controller and they partner with Microsoft, all I'm saying is, like, yeah, first party stuff, of course, is only going to live on Sony. But for third party stuff, like, they have the money to put down if they want to.
Totally.
To get those to have a version of Battlefront that's only on Oculus and it's not on PSVR. Like, stuff like that.
Sony's had a really kind of weird track record with proprietary stuff. I mean, look at, like, Vita memory cards, and then look at, I don't know, like, it was them and Philips who partnered to make CDs. CDs worked out pretty well. And it's kind of...
They even had mini-discs.
Mini-disc, memory stick duo. Like, they've been kind of hit or miss along the way. I think Blu-ray was co-developed by them and, like, a few other big companies.
Yeah.
But, like, sometimes that backfires and sometimes it works out really well. I think this is one of those instances where it's more beneficial. Like, I think the VR platform as, like if you've already got an install base of PS4s of 40 million, whatever the hell it is, and you're introducing a new piece of technology that is, like, if you own one of these things that you maybe already own,
Street Fighter always had
a tutorial.
Or a tutorial.
This they season, teach you how to play it.
And it doesn't have a story mode, so they did say that story sure coming... Yeah, they haven't mentioned that arcade mode is coming. That actually isn't part of their officially announced roadmap yet. So I think the weird thing about games now is that, you know, the big argument is that, you know, when we bought Battlefront, well, the old Battlefront had...
Put down the knife.
One, got it. The old Street Fighter had everything in the box. Like, Killer Instinct, when it came out in the Xbox One's launch, had just a few fighters, and it was free to play.
Unless they have, like, here is a spec list of parts and... stuff that should be combined to make an Oculus box.
Well, it's exactly why, like, I mean, we have a bunch of Steam boxes in the office now, and I got really excited because I'm like, this is going to be the year where I finally, and I've always dabbled in PC gaming, but I was like, this is the year where I'm going to get into it. And I went over to our reviews editor, Dan Stapleton, who's also like our biggest old school PC guy. Like, he used to run GameSpy and all this other stuff like that. And I'm like, so I want to buy one of these things. And he was like, well, you know, this one only runs Linux. So if you get it, you have to install Windows. I'm like, what? Oh, yeah. Bye. and I know that you're listening to this and going, well, that's incredibly easy, and I'm sure it is, and I know it is, but it's just a thing I don't want to have to deal with. So if I can get to whatever I need to get to by buying one more thing, and it just works. And like, I think about the way when I bought my surround sound headset for my PS4, and I plugged in a dongle, and I turned it on. I was like, wow,
and
my games sound great.
Exactly.
Ding.
Yeah, that's really all it is. But it's you've got that, like, also worth pointing out, Oculus or Facebook and Steam or Valve neither have experience with hardware, with doing their own hardware.
And more importantly, with retail.
Does, but, yeah.
Like, the bigger thing, honestly, like,
but what about the Steam controller?
But seriously, dude, like, aside from plugging it in and having it be easy and having it work with your hardware, it's just literally, like, Sony already has shelf space at GameStop, at Walmart, at Target, at every store you go into. Sony can dedicate whatever the hell they want to PSVR this fall.
What's the most amount of money everyone in this room has given to the HTC company in their lives?
I had a...
right.
HTC
so,
mobile,
there it is.
Mobile phone.
Okay.
Was that I went to the doctor once and I got penicillin from my HTC.
I don't, that's a health tech. I don't even know what that
health
means.
Health tech corporation. That actually sounds like an insurance company.
No, I know a lot of people have HTC phones, but like they are not really a household name in the same way.
And especially not in the electronics department of, you know, most major retailers. And I think like even if Oculus is like a million times better, let's say PSVR makes everybody sick and it's a mess or whatever, which I don't think will happen. But if that does happen, like Oculus still has an uphill battle just to be in stores in front of people. Like,
right.
And every
and also
fall,
having a terrifying nightmare dystopian name.
Yeah, and like Sony can publish like, hey, you get a PS4 with a PSVR for $750 bucks or whatever it is, and that's their big holiday push. Whereas Oculus, like, it's a lot harder to be like, oh, like, walk into your Walmart and go to the PC aisle and grab this thing and then come grab the Oculus
also,
and the touch controllers.
If you're listening to the show, you're already kind of in the know, so you're exempt from this next statement. But gamers mostly don't really care about what the best looking thing is. Most people mostly don't really care. Like historically in the console wars, and this is the first time we've ever actually seen it differently, but the not best looking game system
consoles
sells
wouldn't
the best.
Exist if that wasn't the case, because PCs are always going to look better.
Yeah,
and
they're
run
always going
like,
to look better.
Every gaming PC is
you're
better
so right.
than a console, but the only reason consoles have been viable is because you can go buy them for $600 and get everything you need, even if they're brand new.
Now, like PS4 this time around arguably has the best graphics of the consoles, but the best selling console last generation was the Wii.
Yeah.
And before that, it was the PS2, which were both like crucially underperforming compared to their competition. Mm-hmm. And gamers didn't care because it's the console with the best library. And right now, I'd say the PS4 has the best library. And during the PS2 era, it did. During
the
Wii
did
era,
not.
It did not.
That was just a momentary lapse in judgment from America as a whole.
We screwed up. We just really missed bowling. I don't know what happened back then.
We just want to spend more time with our grandmas.
Well, yeah, they don't stay around long. You gotta bowl them while you can.
The Wii comparison is interesting because that's like the whole... pick up the plastic things and wave them around with your hands and it does the thing on the TV with little weird Eggman. Like, that's one of those things you can show to your grandma or grandpa and they'll be like, wow, that's crazy.
Yep.
Show them a hat you put on and it shows you Dinosaur World.
Yep.
Like, it's a lot different. And if you're like, how do I get that? Well, you're like, well, it's this much money. Like, I mean, my dad has friends who have, like, 3D TVs.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? Like, I didn't know anybody had those, you know? Yeah. But there's, like, that weird kind of section of... I think dad tech is a term that Anthony Carboni coined, which is like a very specific thing. And I think the Morpheus is like, it's, I don't know, like the fact that it's like you buy this thing and this thing, and then you plug it together and it does the thing, whereas you're not going on this whole rabbit hole of like other technology.
Yeah.
Of course, flip side of that is Mattel is also doing VR headsets with the Viewfinder.
Yeah.
Which is Viewmaster? Viewmaster.
Yeah, we have one.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring that
one in the office.
Which is adorable because it's just like put your phone in there, put your like, you know, Kindle Fire phone, whatever. Plop it in there. And you
now,
can,
if
we have that with a demo called Space.
If you really want to figure out which of these systems won't survive, that's when you talk to dads, because dads historically buy the one that fails. Dads are like,
I think HD DVD.
Yeah, dads are the HD DVD laser disc guys, and they just have a wall of them. They're like, it's coming back anytime now. Like I've had friends whose parents just, they have like this thing in their basement they just won't get rid of. And they're just like, well, you don't understand. Like, I put a lot of money in this, and it's still the best quality ever. And you're like, you made a bad bet. Like, you just bet on the wrong horse, and that's okay. But, like, stop being a dad and being so stubborn and throw
you know
it out.
What's funny is in my basement, I have your old surround sound system.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was your father period.
To me. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
You're a good dad.
Thanks.
I think you're a good dad, too.
Hey, so speaking of old stuff, Far Cry Primal is a game about caveman.
Very old stuff.
Very old. 10,000 BCs old.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've been playing this, you and me?
You and I have been playing this a lot.
This just came out. It's
so I will say, so right off the bat, IGN gave this a 7.9. That's a very good. An 8
almost
is a great.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people expected this to be a lot worse. 7.9 is a really good score, or a very good score. But even if you take all that away, that's you know, play more 7.9s or whatever it is, you know? I think a lot of people just really only play the games that are at the top. With, like, game rental services now and even borrowing stuff from your friends or Steam sales, there's so many excuses.
I thought you were stealing.
Stealing. Straight up robbing.
Yeah, larceny.
Yeah, what you do is you steal a weapon first, and then you can use that weapon to steal any game you want from anywhere. You
heard
it here first.
Yeah.
Crimecast Beyond.
Crimecast.
So, anyway, this game, I think, is a lot better than any of us expected it to be, considering we only found out in about a few months.
Uh-huh.
We thought this would sort of be this generation's Blood Dragon.
Right.
In that it's not, like, a fully complete experience, but it stands on its own, but it feels more like icing on a cake we had a year ago.
Yeah, I think if they called it Far Cry 5 or whatever, it would piss people off. Because
yeah.
It's like, it just came out with the other one, but it's, like, it's also about cavemen, which is sort of
a
departure.
So I actually like that they didn't call it Far Cry 5, because it's not. That would sort of insinuate that it's an evolution from 3 or 4, and instead it's a totally diagonal step in a completely different direction,
which I
really appreciate.
I really wish that Far Cry, and I feel like we might be seeing this because we've already seen it with Assassin's Creed. I think it's going to be dropping the number system pretty soon. Just because, like, if the number, you know, denotes, like, there's some kind of, like,
progression.
Yeah. And there's not. It's the game is literally called Far Cry. It means something drastically different.
And Far Cry 1 has, like, nothing to do
with
it.
1 and 2 are so different than what...
Were those Crytek? Mm-hmm. Or like, were
one was, not two.
I think two is Ubisoft's first one.
Yeah,
okay.
But it's just that weird thing of like, and you have it written here, and I'm excited to talk to you about what you guys think it is, but like, I don't even know what a Far Cry game is.
Yeah.
Like, what defines that?
So that's definitely worth talking about. I kind of jumped on board. I played two a bunch.
Yeah.
Like, I think I saw somebody playing that, and I was like, what is that game? And they're like, it's Far Cry. I'm like, that fire looks great.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get that game, and I'll play it. And I played a bunch of it. Definitely probably ruined my old MacBook because I was playing it boot camp, which is not a great way to play a game like Far Cry with fire. And then 3 came along, and I was like, hey, guys, look at this game. Guys, everyone's like, what? What is this game? It's Far Cry. Who cares? And I was like, look at this game.
Yeah.
There's animals everywhere, and you can fight them.
And it came out like in December at like this weird time.
It came out
like,
on Jay-Z's birthday on December 4th.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It was just so weird because like
I know that from the Black Album.
We weirdly like... not like ignored it, but it's like I kind of underestimated it, and then like over Christmas break that was the only game I played.
Which one? Three?
Three.
Three is one of my favorite games ever. It's basically like a really politically incorrect Mountain Dew commercial where you're like jumping around with hang gliders and wingsuits and you punch a tortoise in the face.
Right. Right.
And four came along, or Blood Dragon came along. Blood Dragon is I think short answer my favorite game. I love that one a whole lot because it takes like all this stupid loud 80s stuff that I love and it makes like this weird send. It made like a Leslie Nielsen movie of a Far Cry game, you know?
Yeah.
Like
that is Max Scoville the game.
Yeah, it's just such a stupid over the top thing. And then like 4 came along and I was like, okay, so now it's like 3, but it's prettier a little bit, and there's elephants and it's in Nepal, and they're kind of leaning into this craziness aspect of it, but as opposed to leaning into like the kind of not taking itself too seriously, they seem like they're taking it more seriously.
While also getting dumber than it's ever gotten.
Yeah. Right.
Which was really interesting, because that's why my main problems with 4, which I actually thought was really fun, really gorgeous, and I think it leaned a little too heavily on that sort of like extreme sport Mountain Dew stuff.
4
did as well. But what I didn't like about 4 was that you had this really interesting sort of like Tibetan setting with this like kind of Anita Sarkeesian freedom fighter liberating woman character who was just like, I'm going to stand up for this. All these oppressors are here. And in the other corner, you had drug adventures with Beavis and Butthead, mm-hmm. and they would take you up to Shangri-La Mountain Town, where you would get high with them in their crappy cabin, and bad, like, you know, Spin Doctors covers would play, and you'd have to run around and fight imaginary tigers. And I just dreaded doing any of these missions, and the problem was you had to do them to progress and open up areas in the open world. There was this point where I was like, I'm going to kill everyone and cross this bridge and go check out everything over here in the mountains. And I couldn't until I did like 7 adventures with Beavis and Butthead. And I hated it. And when I was done with those, I had to go talk to Anita about how serious everything was over here. And it didn't make any sense, because it was just like...
You're going to get a raft for you thinking that Anita Sarkeesian and Beavis and Butthead are Far Cry.
No, I think they literally based the character off of Anita in a lot of ways. You can go look that up. And they did not base the characters off Beavis and Butthead. I'm just calling them that because they're dumb. And it sucks because I really like Beavis and Butthead.
I want an open world Beavis and Butthead game.
I totally want that. But
did we never get one of those?
No.
A Telltale game. Series.
So yeah, it kind of like broke up the
frog baseball.
It kind of broke up the spirit of the game. Whereas I thought what it did so well was the like exploration, the hunting, like the gathering, the like making plants, the upgrade
flying
system.
Around with the wingsuit,
flying around with the wingsuit, all that kind of stuff. And then we got like really worried when we said, you know, they're making a 10,000 BC Far Cry game that doesn't have cars, it doesn't have helicopters, it doesn't have grenade launchers or machine guns. And I was like, how is this going to affect everything? But it's like, well, they found some weird version for almost all of the things in that game for this game. And for the ones they didn't, I don't really miss them. Like, it's very interesting in that hunting in Far Cry was always pretty much unload a machine gun clip in a tiger's face and feel like you're ever threatened, and you're not. But in this game, like, it feels like hunting, and I don't want to sound like anti-NRA, like liberal anti-gun nut guy, where I'm like, well, if you want to be a real hunter, go out there with a sword. Like, no, don't do that. Like,
sword,
you'll die. A knife or your fist, punch an elephant in the lip. Like, no, don't do all that. But there's something very visceral and cool about walking around with like spears and arrows, and like the closest thing you have to a grenade is like you make a bag of bees that you throw at people, like bee bombs and stuff like that.
Bee bombs and Rocksteady?
Yeah.
This game, honestly, it does some stuff that I never think I'd get in the same game. Mm-hmm. The bees were a weird addition to Far Cry 4. Like, I feel like they were added very last minute. And also, the bees that you could do stuff with in Shadow Mordor were one of those things that made it really fun.
Yeah.
In this case, you got full-on bee grenades, which is one of the things I like the most about Dragon Age Inquisition. I like mm-hmm. a good bee bomb now and then. nice big bag of bees to chuck at some bad boys. Then, of course, there's the ability to ride a bear, which I didn't think that you get to do in this.
I didn't realize, now that you said it, that this does feel very Shadow of Mordor. This almost feels like this year's Shadow of Mordor.
It feels in the sense that like the story's really kind of backburnered to really strong gameplay.
Yeah.
I think they've needed that. I think like for me, the story stuff is why I didn't get that far into 4. Because mechanically, like 4 is just a prettier 3. Like, I mean, honestly, like
and it's still
I
very
like,
fun. Like, it's tight, you know. It works.
But I didn't. So even more so than like a GTA or something where I'll play it other than the story, like I'll play it sort of around the story for a while and then I dive into the story missions. Like Far Cry 4 didn't really let you do that. Like you kind of eventually you can, but like I just felt like I just wasn't that interested in the story and all I wanted to do was mess around the island.
Yeah,
and it
I
feels
feel
like Primal lets you do that soon.
I adored Pagan Min.
Yeah.
But the stuff around him I didn't really care about.
Yeah.
Like I thought he was right up there with Voss in terms of like having super fascinating bad guys.
Having Troy Baker as Pagan Min was a great get. Criminally underused. Like mm-hmm. he had a lot of stuff
same
in the beginning,
Voss,
a lot of stuff in the end. Yeah, and maybe a couple of things in the middle. Like you can literally beat Far Cry 4 in 8 minutes.
Oh yeah, that early.
Like
ending.
If
you just
do nothing,
at the table.
You say yes to his crab rangoon, and you get in a helicopter. No one dies, and everything's fine. Yeah. That's not a spoiler. Just go to hell. But that's exactly why I like this game, because it takes all the stuff from 4 that I didn't like and cuts it right out. And it gives you these characters who are just like kind of unga bunga cavemen. But it's got this like very kind of gross, visceral savageness to it where you're running around the landscape just with a club for the most part, just smashing dudes in the head. You get attacked by packs of wolves. You can get a saber-toothed tiger who's your sidekick. Yeah. You can tame animals, and they'll hunt other animals. Like, I was getting attacked by wolves, and I threw bait down, and one of the wolves became my friend, and then my friend wolf started attacking all his friends. And I'm sitting there going, like, this is weird. Like, why would he do this? But it's also, like, there's no laws. This is before... Beastmaster. Yeah, I'm a Beastmaster.
TV's Beastmaster.
We're trying to explain to your friend what a Far Cry game is.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting to, like, break down, like, as a franchise, like, as a series, it doesn't... It has, like, a few kind of, you know, continuing things. It's open world.
Mm-hmm.
It's first person, violent. You're in some place where you're going to do some murders and stuff.
There's some resource gathering to it. Like, you have to actually, like, sort of hunt, even in the other games, like, by just procuring things from the environment around you.
But there's a certain kind of anarchy to it.
Yes, that's like, perfect way to put
basically,
it.
Basically, I would say it's like GTA, but... with survival and no laws.
Yeah, there's a chaos element to it.
Yeah.
Like, and you and I both, and I think that's when, like, the best stuff happens in this game and all these games, where there's this sort of chaotic emergent moment where I'm walking through the forest and a bear on fire comes running full speed at me. And I'm like, how did this happen? Oh God. And I pull out my club and I start smashing at his head. Or, you know, you turn a corner and there's three mammoths and they start chasing you, but they chase you into a pack of rhinos. And then you just walk away and you go, all right, you guys just deal with each other.
Yeah. And that's it's so weird because like Far Cry, like it doesn't have an identity in kind of a good way.
Yeah.
Because like, it can be anything. And like Ubisoft has managed to kind of make this weird, like all of their franchises are sort of mushed together right now in like this way that's really interesting, where like honestly like Black Flag feels like as much of a Far Cry game as an Assassin's Creed game at moments. Like,
yeah.
And I think like Conquering Outposts and all that stuff is something that's sort of a universal Ubisoft thing now rather than a specific Far Cry thing. And like Wildlands looks like something that's like really going to do a lot of the Far Cry stuff but be kind of its own thing also. And so like my thing as like someone who hasn't really played Primal yet other than demos, like I don't know what makes it like Far Cry rather than just like another Ubisoft thing. Like why is this a Far Cry game and not just like a caveman new IP?
That's a really good question. You know, honestly, like I don't have an answer for that, but I sort of like it.
I mean, because the name Far Cry sells. Like to me, it's super. I'm not crazy cynical.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't rhetorical. Like, I'm like legitimately asking, like, what do you feel like makes it a
like
Far Cry game?
I remember reading about, like, sort of, like, Nintendo's design philosophy, which is, like, come up with a hook for a game first, and then secondary, like, kind of figure out which characters it fits with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think they kind of did that with this, where somebody said, I really want to make a game in this setting and keep it, like, savage and horrible and just bloody and wet and gross everywhere. And then they started saying, you know, when you can hunt and gather, and they're like, well, we have a game that kind of does stuff like that, and they put it all together. I don't know the exact lineage for this, but I imagine that the second it started feeling too familiar or too different, they realized it fits right in the universe they have already.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think Assassin's Creed's a little bit different. Like, there's a storyline, for better or worse, that travels, a narrative that travels through those games, which doesn't really happen with Far Cry, which is what I kind of love about them.
Yeah.
You just kind of jump in.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, the thing is, I always kind of roll my eyes at people who are like, yeah, I play every Assassin's Creed game. I'm like, they're huge, and they're very similar.
Yeah.
And there's obviously, you're getting a different thing every time, and I kind of respect it, but I'm like, I'm so relieved to hear that they are pumping the brakes on that being a, like, annualized thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and they also slap you across the face and pull you out of it constantly. Like, every Assassin's Creed game sets up this whole new world, this whole new setting. It's, like, meticulously recreated, and in some cases, it's like, you love these new characters, and you're exploring this world, and then, like, every 5 hours, they yank you out of it. And, like, they've gotten better recently by a lot, but, like, Far Cry, like, lets you just stay immersed, which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Like, Far Cry 3 had those flashback moments, which I thought were kind of interesting to add, like, context. But, like, in general, like, you're never leaving that world, you know? And I think that's something that, like, in Primal, if this was an Assassin's Creed game, and every, you know, few hours, it's like, oh, you're back in the Animus, and whoops, you desynchronized.
Oh,
or
it would,
like,
totally kill you.
It totally pulls you out of it. And I want to see Assassin's Creed learn from Far Cry in that, like, I want them to let you stay in this world, let you stay immersed. Because I think, like, Assassin's Creed at this point should just be historical fiction.
Correct. Exactly. On that note, it's kind of cool that this is also historical fiction in a lot of ways. I mean, I don't know how accurate it is. Probably not at all, because I ride a bear. But I think that it'd be really cool to see them kind of screw around and do, like, the fact that we've gotten this game, Far Cry 4, and Far Cry Blood Dragon, and those are the last three in the series.
They're all totally different.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
That's super weird and out there. And there's, like, been no attempt to try to be like, we're just experimenting. Like, you know what? Screw it. I'm totally down to see what the next Far Cry is.
I actually can't think of a lot of like AAA games that sort of follow that same rubric of like every single time. Even the Call of Duty games are sort of an evolution of themselves each time. You know?
It's more like the only example is like Mario or something, like things that are like so dread. Like it's like you're in a castle, you're in space. Like it's like they're like so completely different. Like this is a way bigger difference than like any Call of Duty or Assassin's Creed.
I mean, this is Far Cry is arguably Ubisoft's like flagship shooter series, and they took the guns away.
Yeah.
Like, how insane is that? Yep. They're like, yeah, we're going to go way back. World War II? Try even further. And then, like, I do like you can also, like, they give you all melee weapons, but you have the option to light them all on fire and throw them all.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a really, like, design-wise, I think it's really, it's a very smart, kind of weird game. And
there is that sort of desperate moment of, like, I've shot 10 arrows at this bear, it's running full speed at me, I'm going to light my club on fire and just throw it and hope for the best.
I'm glad this is first, too. Yeah. I think it has the advantage of, like, there are several caveman games announced at this point, because we have Wild, and we have Patrice Desolée's game, and there are, like, multiple things, like, set in this universe, and I'm kind of glad this got to be first, because it feels like it'll be the craziest of them.
Yeah,
whereas
totally
I would imagine, I mean, like, Wild has crazy snake gods and stuff, too, but I would just imagine that, like, the other ones will be a little bit more grounded, whereas Far Cry is just, like, the do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So where do you guys want to see Far Cry go next? I have an idea for Far Cry. I
think
it's a real good idea for a Far Cry game.
Don't tell us. We're done.
It's a real good one.
I'm kidding. What? You should tell us.
You're just mad because I think we're writing the exact same one in the Google Doc when we're planning this.
Yep.
I think they should make a Far Cry game that's based on what Americans think Australia is like.
Oh, man.
So you get on this island and there's just like clouds of spiders coming by and there's like a bunch of drunk guys smashing beer cans on their head, but then there's like a fire tornado.
I feel like two months ago you pitched this game when insulting where Alana comes from.
Yeah, when Alana was on the show and I was asking her how her homeland was like, this is pretty much what I picture.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I love that. It would be great if, spoilers, it ended with a real Australian showing up and being like, none of this is real. And you're like, what? Funny. Like, sort of like the end of Lord of the Flies.
Just like a hard cut to black. Yeah. I would actually like to see them tackle, like, an urban setting. Like, honestly, like, don't be on a crazy island. Like, let's see this happening, like, in, like, almost a Division, but basically, like, do it in that weird Far Cry way of, like, it's like I Am Legend or something, like, at the beginning.
Or, like, Tokyo Jungle.
Or Tokyo Jungle, exactly. Yeah. Where you're in, like, not quite post-apocalyptic. Like, it's, like, very recently after people, but it's, like, you're still in this urban setting where you have to, like, find everything, and maybe there is wildlife that's come in.
Skin five car dealers to make a bigger backpack.
I think they should do like a Far Cry where you're in this nice suburban area, but the zoo has just broken open, and so it's
that's
just,
awesome.
I was sort of thinking of that.
I really
like
that a lot.
Far Cry Zoo Break.
So it's like modern day, or even like 1990s America before cell phones.
It's Jumanji. You're just describing
it's
Jumanji.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. Far Cry Jumanji would be
That'd
great.
Be pretty good.
Yeah. Ubisoft.
Come on.
Far Cry Jumanji. Yeah. Make that happen.
Let's go to their office right now.
I was trying to think about it. We've always seen these kind of like there are these far off places. They're like, you know, Nepal or the Rook Islands or whatever. You know, it's different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be kind of curious to see, like, what's a really weird part of America? And it's like,
right.
1990s rural Florida.
Yeah.
The Everglades.
Like 1990s Everglades. And there's like a bunch of dudes who are like, those DEA agents gone? Yeah. We're running some meth in my shoe.
You'd have to take.
We got fan boats.
You'd have to take some creative liberties with the animals.
Oh, totally.
Because it's mostly just alligators or
not really
or crocodiles.
They actually
or
had a problem because people kept buying ball pythons, but then they'd get big and they'd let them go. And so
oh, really? And
a,
they ate dogs?
There's kind of a scourge of ball pythons fighting with alligators. And
it's also racist.
There's racist. There's probably
Earth's deadliest animal.
There's probably a bird.
Yeah, there's definitely a bird.
They have one. I read it.
There's a 60-foot macaw.
Very large bird. They call him Old Steve.
Old Steve
kills a lot of people.
Far Cry Primal got so close to exactly what I wanted this to become, but dinosaurs.
Dude,
like,
yeah.
Straight up. So there's an Easter egg. I don't think this is a spoiler, but somebody found a YouTube video of somebody found a cave in Far Cry Primal that you go into the back of it. But side note, the caves in this game are horrible. I get so lost in them. But there's in the back of a cave, there's, I think, what people believe is the glowing purple neon skeleton of a blood dragon surrounded by eggs.
That's awesome.
It's just like a nice little Easter egg. Or it's a dinosaur, you can't really tell, or it's just a crate dragon from Star Wars. Either of those things becoming sort of a reality, like in terms of
totally
DLC.
Fine.
If that's teasing, like, if that's teasing a Blood Dragon 2 that's caveman infused, like if the big DLC pack for this is, oh hey, it's a Blood Dragon sequel.
Yeah.
And they just suddenly all the cavemen have like laser weaponry, and you're just like, what?
Yeah. I'm like, no, no. We are the music makers, right? Do whatever you want.
Especially with Assassin's taking a year off, I would bet any amount of money that there's already some other Far Cry game in pre-production.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be fun as like an expansion to this, but I hope the next one is as different as this is from 4. Like, yeah. I want
like,
them to keep
picturing it. Like, one of you guys kind of mentioned it, but like some like almost like a Jurassic Park ish premise, not necessarily dinosaurs, but with some like rich white dude who tried to build this like amusement park of the future in South America somewhere. And it just goes horribly awry.
Just a Bioshock game. Like, yeah, but like yeah. Thing.
Well, it has a bunch of animals.
Yeah. Instead of just like guys who like to buy drugs from vending machines.
Yeah. And kill men and steal like, their coconuts.
It's just a crazy rich old man creates a theme park full of fantastic beasts that could be anything between like
Candyland.
Yeah. Godzilla bad guys, like Mothra looking things, and you just
could,
go nuts.
And you could totally have the whole thing like sectioned off by different environments. Like here's the desert part, and then here's the water part. And
I
like
absolutely love that. And you're in the desert part and you're fighting like gigantic salamanders with wings and stuff like that.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like the sort of the Trapper Keeper's sketchbook approach that we're seeing in, what's it called?
Drawn to Death?
Yeah, Drawn to Death.
I was just about to say...
But of animals, you know?
I was about to say the Lisa Frank, but I was almost going to say the Anne Frank approach. So don't do the Anne Frank approach, but do the Lisa Frank approach.
Dude, if I would totally play a Lisa Frank Far Cry game where everything is beautiful...
That's kind of what Blood Dragon
was. Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that basically Blood Dragon?
Yeah, it's more or less Blood Dragon.
I would want something even happier, though.
Far Cry Laser Mammoth?
Yeah, like even happier and pinker, just rainbows everywhere.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Or just like cute puppies.
I want to see Everglades Far Cry, but then I realized we totally do have that Wildlands game, like that game.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to think about it too hard because it looks real cool.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be real good.
So we know so little about it, but it's like from what it seems that
demo was awesome.
It is everything open about Far Cry. It's none of the structure.
Zach Ryan, who's been on the show a few times, one of the like producers here at IGN, awesome guy, was kind of on the fence about this game. He's like, I never really got into Far Cry. And we showed him a clip from a Let's Play that Max and I did where we were cautiously approaching a riverbank and a woolly mammoth walked up to the river and he stuck his like trunk in to drink and all of a sudden an alligator jumped out and grabbed his trunk and started dragging him into the water and they're just like screaming at each other and we're just off to the side like and he was like, this game looks awesome.
Yeah.
That's all it took.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you're on the fence about it, Far Cry Primal is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I think we all recommend it. Those of us who have played it. Mm-hmm. So speaking of franchises getting out of their comfort zones.
That was very good, Max.
Yeah.
Ooh,
very
proud Max of you. Way.
Marty went in the nice old group. The good old Facebook
was it
group.
Podcast Beyond or Facebook dash MySpace
group slash Podcast Beyond
podcast.com/Facebook.group
facebook.com/MySpace is the website of our address.
Yeah, but instead of the weekly rapid fire, which Brian usually does, we twist it up a little bit because our friends at Square Enix Montreal gave us a bunch of codes for Hitman Go for PS4 and Vita.
Which is another game that takes a franchise and shakes it up a little
bit.
Makes it a nice little board game.
And that game came out for mobile and iOS last year, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Really good game.
If you were like, oh man, that game looks beautiful, but I need a controller to play it.
Your wishes have been answered. Is my favorite Hitman game ever. Yeah. I like it so much more than traditional Hitman game.
Yeah, and so
it was originally called the Hitmango.
Yeah,
ooh, no, it was about hitting mangoes.
You guys it was originally a Fruit Ninja knockoff.
Yeah. So we went in and we asked you guys what PlayStation franchises should get out of their comfort zone. Mm. All of this and how. And we gathered some of the answers. And if we read yours, that means you won a Hitman Go code.
Uh-oh.
That I will send you via something. I don't know. I'll figure out how the internet works.
Facebook messaging. You have their names.
I'm not on Facebook.
What? Yes, you are.
Shut up, Marty.
Max, what are some of the franchises that people would like to see get out of their comfort zone?
Sebastian Thrower says The Order 1886 via Telltale old LucasArts style adventure game. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's smart.
I love that world.
So that's the thing is like the thing I didn't like about that game was the combat. And so the idea of just being able to tell a cool story about Victorian werewolves and have it be like choice-based.
Cool Knights of the Round Table stuff.
Yeah.
Klein Felt says a tactical RPG taking place in the Last of Us universe for Vita. Okay, that last part's kind of a stretch.
Well,
we just
want
a Vita game.
Probably not Vita, but man, that's a really cool idea. Like almost like a tactic style, like almost like a Fire Emblem like strategy game where you have to like avoid the clickers and stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And where you're sort of like getting a party of survivors and like even have like a permadeath thing to where it's
like
harrowing an
XCOM
and like
Last of Us basically. Yeah. Oh, I'd love
that.
I
really incredible. Wish they did more stuff like that.
Yeah.
Also, it'd be really interesting because if you had like a stealth element and like you're trying not to shoot them with your guns,
then
you blow your cover. So it's a matter of like actually sneaking around, which is kind of what was it Incognito's doing?
Yeah, that's right.
That's what actually kind of bums me out the most, like tangent about the sort of rise and fall of the Vita and also PlayStation Minis in that there's less of a space for like just a small weird little game like that to be made.
Well, that's why I'm really glad that Hitman Go is coming, and I hope they eventually do Lara Croft Go, because those are games that, like, on an iPad are awesome. And it's like, if you can, whatever, like, put those into, like, get trophies and play them on PS4 or Vita, like, that's kind of what I want, and especially on a plane. Mm-hmm. Like, Lara Croft Go, Hitman Go are so good on planes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Matthew Viteri said, open world God of War, all of Athens and surrounding areas, gathering powers and allies to fight the gods.
So this was less of a getting out of its comfort zone, and this is just more of what I think this game is going to be.
I was just
going to
say, that is what I expect the next God of War
to be. God of War 4 to be. Especially since the series is first introduced early on PS2, and then obviously evolved to 3 on PS3. I don't think you can make a traditional linear... Not that I don't think you can, but I don't think they will make a traditional linear, you know, gorgeous action game. I think it's going to have those set pieces, but also be a giant open world game with more RPG elements, every other
sounds
game is.
Like how you get people more interested in that series.
I also want to rip a man's eyeball out and make him look at it.
Awful.
You can do
awful,
that.
Awful, awful. Nick Zatarain, Bloodborne dating sim. You're going on a date with Vicar Amelia. Don't go to bed with the one reborn. It won't end well.
I love this idea. I want to go on a date with those toilet skulls that are all just with the hands.
I would love that. I'd love like a corny like. Oh,
what'd you think of the movie? I love you.
So I got you. I got you a present. It's an ice cream sandwich.
I love that game.
Shane B says, I'd love to see Traveler's Tales. That's the Telltale. That's the Lego one. Tackle a Lego turn-based RPG. Mm-hmm. Keep the big open world and the collectibles tied to side missions, but give me the battle system of South Park or Child of Light. Keep the humor, the licensed properties, and, of course, keep it Lego.
Man, that's really interesting.
Like, imagine if Lego, that was what Lego Dimensions was. Like, instead of being a Lego game, it's a big open RPG where you're, like, Gandalf and... You know, Doctor
Like
Who
almost like
Homer.
With Skylanders, like you're leveling up those characters when you put them down rather than just inserting them and playing as them.
Yeah. And I think, I adore the sort of simplistic 16-bit RPG natures of Child of Light and South Park. So,
And like we've talked before, but like the best, in my opinion, the most interesting Lego games, at least, if not the best, are like Lego City Stories, Lego City Undercover, which were taking just a weird Lego world. And obviously the Lego movie ended up doing that a little better, but like, man, it's really interesting to think about no license attached. Yeah. It's like that level of destruction, that level of all the cool collectibles and all of that, but like not tied to any particular franchise.
But also, like, what if Final Fantasy went back to the traditional sort of 16-bit mentality by doing a thing like this, where like, hey, you can have Lego versions of Cloud and Terra and, you know, and Squall and everyone, but it's very simple and the RPG system
is
like...
isn't that kind of what, was it, Final Fantasy...
There's a
baby
couple
ones coming to Vita.
What is that game
little
called?
Little Babies.
Explorers.
Explorers is the 3DS one.
World Champion. No.
Final Fantasy.
World of Explorers.
World of Final Fantasy.
World of Final Fantasy.
Yeah, World of Final Fantasy.
Little Baby Final Fantasy.
Yeah, LBFF. Four babies.
No, it looks pretty cute. Mm-hmm. I think that, I don't know, I feel like turn-based RPGs are something that's really, it's really for old people a lot. I mean, I guess there's obviously this Pokemon and stuff like that, but... When I think of that, I think it's so almost antithetical
nostalgic.
To Lego. Lego was like a goof. It's like a running around little playful stuff. And like I remember as a kid, I always kind of hated turn based stuff initially because it was like you're kind of waiting around. It's not like exciting, you know. And the Lego games are sort of like squishy enough that you're not gonna like you never get mad at them. Like they're very easy, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it depends on the pacing,
except
right?
The three of us playing Lego Marvel Adventures.
Yeah, like if it was one of those sort of like 3/4 top down view things of the old like kind of. Big green flats that you build stuff on top of, and as you completed objectives, things built up around you.
Maybe
so basically,
like
that could be cool.
That'd be interesting.
This next one's probably the one I think is the most interesting.
That's pretty good. Wesley Fernandez says Katamari Murder Mystery.
It was the big ball. Mystery solved. The thing covered in dead bodies killed the bodies.
I mean, I've always thought
it crushed them.
This is such a weird niche thing, obviously, but like I love the idea of a Katamari game where you don't control that ball, where like this ball is wreaking havoc, and you're like one of the people on the ground. That's like. Hey, they just swallowed the Empire State Building. That's not good. Like, and have to figure out a way to stop it or something.
Like, and at first, it's like, oh, it's cute. Look, it took care of our rat problem in our basement. Like, and you're like, oh God, it killed our dog.
Yeah. Roland Emmerich's Katamari Damacy.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Like it starts off with this infomercial for these things that help pick up dust in your basement or whatever, and it's like
it keeps growing.
You know, your dead skin cells are everywhere, but they're so small you can't even see them. But Katamari can, and all of a sudden starts picking them up, and it's like it got big enough to clean your backyard. Now it'll mow your lawn, and like. days later, there's just this slow, methodic piano sound as all of your loved ones get attached to this thing. And, like, your school and your house and your job and just rolls by, and it's like, what will it catch next?
I think it'd be cool if at the end of every Katamari level, you had to dispose of the evidence and roll that thing into a big quarry somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm going to hide the bodies, all 300 of them.
I like, though, because they're not dead, because everyone's still alive. And well, until it gets turned into a star. And then
until you roll into a quarry.
Yeah, so you cover it with dirt and make it a weird mountain.
So here's another one. Josh Diendorf says, Nintendogs, but with monsters from Bloodborne.
So that's where, again, you can either date them or own them.
Oh, I really like that. Yeah. I really like that. So you can have the little
like check in on
that. You can go on a date with Vicar Amelia, but then have the blah, blah, guys or dogs.
You can have a little toilet boy collection as baby as baby dogs. I like this a lot. I definitely want a pet baby nightmare skeleton horse covered in old woman's hair.
Yeah. Justin Pauly said, finally, Jumping Flash VR.
Yeah.
Which
let's get
everyone...
Jumping Flash out of its comfort zone of the 90s and bring it to here.
Yeah.
I like that.
Also, everyone will vomit because all that game is about jumping in first person and looking down and crashing
towards
the ground.
Better than jumping in first person.
Hey, look, you can't have VR without some pukes.
There's going to be some puke.
There's going to be a lot of puke.
I'm extremely excited that the prospect of weird VR outtakes, like, remember when we had all those videos of people like ruining their living rooms with their Wiimotes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like knocking over lamps.
Or that guy that hit his wife.
Yeah.
Jesus. That wasn't funny. He did that.
Yeah, I don't think the Wii was a good excuse for that. It was horrible. But like, we're gonna have people.
They didn't even have a Wii. He was just a mean husband.
We're getting sick in their VR hats. Yeah. You know, people who are gonna get dizzy and fall over. It's gonna be an interesting thing.
Yep.
And it might not be the majority, but it will probably be some of it.
Can't wait to see where they spew.
Finally, we have some good news. The MOBA. It's a MOBA, a hero fighter game. One of those games. Smite. It's coming to PS4. It's one of those ones where you get a bunch of little guys and they'll run around.
Starting to sound like a dad over there.
Yeah. Well, the kids are all real into it. It's
Which VR device are you getting?
The League of New Earth. The Doter boys are back again. Yeah.
Yeah. So Smite, which is on Xbox One and PC, is coming to PS4.
Yeah. And we are going to be giving away codes for a closed alpha.
We have an ungodly amount. We don't have the exact number, but it is... A lot. It is in the hundreds of thousands.
It says here an F-ton. I'm doing a two-hour live stream on this game tomorrow, which should be interesting because I've never played it. And I am the same as Max in that I don't really know the genre.
But you're doing it with Brandon Tyrell, who's the expert.
Expert. Yeah. I'm so dumb that I have a wall of laser discs at home. Like a real cool dad.
No, you got to play as the real hero. Was the one of the player characters. You got to go after the towers. Take the
in the 90s,
route.
They sold ball TVs. It was a big, round, ball-shaped television.
So this will work for people in the U.S., but also in Europe.
And Canada, and Mexico, and South America, and Antarctica.
Not Antarctica, probably.
What's going on over there?
That guy who tweeted
Let me tell you the answer, Marty.
That guy tweeted that photo at all of us from Antarctica like a week or two ago.
I always feel bad for people who live there when they're like, eligible for everyone in America except for Antarctica.
Well, it's not America.
No, it's its own continent.
I know, but it's just weird. Because it should be. Like, just,
oh, they're very cold.
Just if you want one of those codes, something.
If you want one of those codes.
As Americans, that we don't really want to conquer Antarctica, but we're doing a damn good job trying to melt it.
Yep.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, but
if you want one of those codes, it's go.ign.com/smitePS4.
Yes, go.ign.com/smitePS4.
And Smite is spelled SMITE.
And the four is a number four, not FOUR.
So again, that's go.ign.com/SMITEPS4.
Yeah. You did it.
And
the slash is leaning towards the right, not to left. A lot of people think the slash leans towards the left. It's not having that kind of day. It hangs to the right.
And also, when Smite comes out, it's just going to be free to play. And you're not going to need PS Plus or anything. You're just going to be able to play that game. Probably give some money for some gods. This game's about gods. This game's about gods.
Yeah, we're code.
No, this is early access.
Yeah.
No, this is for early access.
There we go. Thanks.
So there you go. There you have it. There's this good old Podcast Beyond. We didn't talk about hams that much.
Nope, not at all. None of those honey-baked, delicious, bourbon-glazed, sweet,
savory flavors.
Thanks, everybody, who tweeted pictures of ham to Andrew Goldfarb at Garfep. He loves a nice, hot honey.
I actually really do like ham.
Yeah, ham is incredible.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if I said this last week. I hate ham. I don't like it. I think it's probably the worst meat.
You don't
sweet.
Like a nice, big, chewy, gristly, big
Wait, is that why you keep? Is that why you keep it in your bed? Because that's a weird place to put your ham.
My hot honey bed ham?
Yeah. All right.
I never told you guys, when I got married a year and 2 months ago, it was to a ham.
Just a spiral, just
honey,
a nice Christmas
clip. All right. Honey baked, I'm home. There you go.
That's right.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm sorry butcher's about dozen. All those ham jokes that we made again. We really ham it up here on Ham Radio. Porkcast Beyond.
Porkcast Beyond.
If you want to email us about angry messages about how we talk about ham too much at the very end.
For like 1% of the whole show.
Sorry. We want to talk about ham for a second because it's funny to us that people got mad at that. It's just beyond@IGN.com. We love to read your emails. We will try to read more of them in the future. And of course, there is that wonderful podcast Facebook group of the friends.
Porkcast Beyond Facebook group.
You can find us all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. He's McBiggity with two G's and two T's. Yep. And he's Agent Bizzle. And Garfep is the little golden farb that we know as Andrew.
Johnny Goldenrod.
Johnny Goldenrod, that's me.
Jimmy, right. So excited about Johnny Rockets.
Watch Up at Noon on Thursday with Max and I, 12 p.m. Pacific, live on IGN, YouTube, Twitch, or whatever your mom has on her
PC. Eat a pizza, even if it fell on the floor.
Yeah.
Don't watch Final. That's not very good.
Yeah, if it fell face down. Don't,
so far.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Better Call Saul is really good so far this season.
Yeah, it's really good.
Go to Tidal.
We're just doing whatever.
Go to Tidal.com and help support Starfleet.
Yeah, that's right. Did you know Tidal's numbers doubled since Kanye's album?
You know, they got a great exclusive on Netflix these days, which is a video of a boy blowing softly into a French horn for a full 90 minutes.
Well, that was a big get for them.
Yeah, so it was Frenchie the Horn Boy.
It's from the creators of Friendship, Make, Yuletide Log, and the
Making
old
a Horn Blower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks,
a fun thing to do is go on Amazon Prime Video and just look for fish tanks. Mm-hmm. You can watch a whole movie just about that a man filmed of just a fish in a tank. And when you do that, it actually screws up all of your recommended settings forever, and it tells you you should watch a fireplace on your TV.
Yeah. Yeah. What else is good is the night vision rat footage.
Yeah.
Which is just they put a big night vision camera in a rat's tunnel, and they're just all in there eating their weird little wooden things.
Max, what's that raccoon documentary you love so much?
Oh, yeah. Why were we watching that? The one that takes place in Toronto?
You can stop listening to the show now.
Yeah.
We're just going
off. Oh, yeah. You're free to go.
Nation.
You're free.
I think it's on Netflix. It's pretty good.
You're free to go.
We put our junk at the end of the show.
There's a Hulu episode about how to make your bed, the best way to make your bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
You fold in corners, or you don't fold in corners. Yeah. If you want mobility in the middle of the night.
The best way to make your bed is actually to thumbtack the sheets to the top of the ceiling and make it look like it's a cool tent. And then people won't bother you because they'll think that you have a tent.
That's very interesting.
No one's ever bothered a man with a tent except the Blair Witch.
No, you'll be in it all by yourself forever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Ham!
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode, so search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.